luncheon, or it was coffee. I think it was coffee that time.
Yes.
It was very close. Whatever. It was very close.
Congratulations, coffee, and enjoy your win.
Thank you. I know it means a lot.
Space Case Sarah show, where we take returning to the recording room very seriously, except I don't, because I'm the one in charge of setting it up. But for the other two, my space nerds, Coffee and Benjamin, this is serious stuff. This, I mean, reputations are on the line. And returning back to the green, or from the green room to the recording studio, is the stuff of legend, epic quest. Legend. Yes. You're listening to the Argon, which we are calling the slow, lazy, slow science episode, just because argon is a noble gas, so it's not very reactive, and it really, I mean, biologically, it doesn't really do much. It's not, I mean, it's just there. It exists. So
it exists. It's there.
Yep. So we talked about plate tectonics, which obviously move very slow. We talked about the massive amount of time, the time scale of the universe. Benjamin had he was kind of chomping at the bit. He has another, what is very slow science, Benjamin, that you would like
speaking
to share with us?
Speaking of noble gases and slowness, the half-life of an isotope of xenon 124, measured to be trillions times longer than the current age of the universe. When the universe does end, it'll be when the last xenon, I assume, breaks down. No, I'm sure other things, it's going to happen. It's an incredibly, incredibly, incredibly slow process of decay, the slowest known. And
wow.
Yes.
Wow. Older than the universe. So don't ask me how to.
The universe dying as a whole technically is the slowest thing, because it's the everything. But the slowest thing in that universe is the decaying of this one isotope of xenon.
Interesting.
Thank you.
Lazy xenon.
Lazy xenon. Another noble gas, which we'll get to. I don't know, many episodes from now.
I mean, should we explain what noble gases are? Have we discussed that?
I don't think so. I mean, and I was actually thinking when he said isotope, I was like, whew.
Oh,
you know, that's a big concept to explain too. So we'll maybe, but let's do noble gases. Let's start with noble gases to listeners. So, what is a noble gas? I mean, to me, I'm like, well,
gases,
yeah,
gases with like little crowns on them.
That's one side of the periodic table. The outline.
Yeah. So we'll leave the ignoble gases to after this segment. But noble gases are basically, like you were saying, Sarah, on one side of the periodic table. And the periodic table from left to right is basically telling you in each atom how many electrons are there in their outermost orbit. Right? So on the far left, they all have less, and on the far right, they all have more.
Oh, wow.
And
one to seven, yes.
Yes, and it's actually eight on the outside of the noble gases. So the outermost layer has an octet, it has a full eight electrons, and that means that it's in a stable configuration. So otherwise, if you have two atoms and they have, you know, not a full octet of eight electrons, it means that they will want to do things. They'll want to either give an electron away and become ionized, or they will want to pull electrons from either free electrons or from other atoms and form bonds with them to get to the stable, energetically stable state of an octet. And so the noble gases are already in that state. They already have all eight electrons to fill their outer layer, which is why they're called noble, because they don't react.
And they have that accent, all of them.
They're good. They don't need anything. Yeah. They're all on the right, correct?
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, my brain is just like, nip, yeah, because they have eight.
Yeah. Stage right.
Yes. And that's why the one and the seven, those are the most, like, they crave the most to get either that one goes up to the seven or the seven loses one. They're very unstable and they really want they want to get to that point.
Otherwise known as pick me Adams.
So, the noble gases, I mean, the whole entire periodic table, again, when we were talking earlier about how kind of the opposite of slow science, we're talking about the figuring out of our atoms into the periodic table and stuff like that was like prime enlightenment time, which is not that long ago, which is so cool how much of our understanding of our natural world has happened over. I see you guys, you're snickering. I can't look and talk at the same time. Okay. You guys need to just cool it. They're sending things back and forth in their chat and I can't look and talk at the same time.
It's like we're passing notes in class.
Yeah, you are. The thing that I guess relatively speaking, yes, in the cosmic scale that is very quick is our existence and our understanding of things and stuff. But I would say if we had to kind of break it down back to a micro scale instead of the macro scale, evolution is extremely slow. It's a very, very slow process in science. That adaptation to survive to the environment can sometimes be, it can be rapid, but then there's also many cases where it's very, very, very slow. And I'm a big fan of evolution. I enjoy learning about all the different weird things that are a part of us, that it's like there's literally zero sense why that should be functionality within us. But because from a very long time ago, that was something that was necessary and now it's not, that makes sense. And so evolution was my little chip into the coin drop into the fountain of this conversation right now, I guess. What else is really good slow science, though? I mean, when you talk about like radioactive decay and stuff like that, that's also just, you know, you're bringing up isotopes and things. There's a lot of things that break down very slowly.
For me, like what's really interesting and also extremely annoying is that as an astrophysicist, you're used to studying different classes of objects, right? So you have planet and a star and neutron stars and all these things, and for the few things that are actually connected, meaning they evolve one thing into another, that evolution takes so damn long that if you see the act of it transitioning from one to the other, like that's super rare, right? Yeah. So like stars, massive stars that have more than 8 times the mass of the sun, when they explode as a supernova at the end of their lives, it's like, okay, cool. Like we've managed to catch a supernova. And then there are these things called supernova remnants, which are like the Crab Nebula, right? So it's this giant cloud of ionized gas and dust that's expanding outwards from what used to be a supernova. And there's a little neutron star in the middle going meh, 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 just kind of like pulsating in the middle. That's the sound it makes, I've checked. But yeah, it's like the time to go from being a supernova to like the remnant of a supernova is tens of thousands of years. So it's like, okay, cool. Now let's just wait for the supernova to become a supernova remnant and discover the neutron star that was left behind. It's like, no,
that's it.
You'll be waiting a very long time.
Forever. Yeah. It's that's where when Carl says astronomy is a very humbling thing to study, that's what he means by that, where it's humbling to acknowledge your finite, very tiny point in time and space and the light that we can observe just right now in this time and this space. And some of that light took eons to get to us, and this is all you have though to be able to observe it, even though it's been going for a while. And that's where he's saying it's humbling. I call it a crisis, but you know, whatever. Yeah, he and I have different word choices. I'm just saying Carl maybe was a little bit better at it than me. I guess, you know, the common thread to all this is time time is sort of the ultimate beat that marches forward that has gone on. It's just forever in the past. It's going to go on forever, not forever, but, you know, a very, very long time into the future. And time is the slowest passage of anything. Unless
I want it to be annoying.
You could be annoying. I mean, unless you're, you know, let's throw some Einstein in here. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, time doesn't go infinitely backwards because time is part of space-time, right? Time moves forward.
Go ahead. Time moves forward. I was going to say, because time can't, that's the one thing you can't do. You can't go backwards in time.
Well, I mean, it depends what you mean by backwards, but when you talk about like the existence of time, if you go far enough back to the Big Bang, time didn't exist before then. I mean, not in any way.
As far as we can see or understand, yes.
In terms of theoretically. So like there is this, there's a pretty famous paper from Georges Lemaître, who was this, I think, Belgian priest, right? We're saying before that all of the scientists back in the day were, you know, mostly rich white dudes, but some of them were also poor white priests. And they...
it was a good second option, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Isaac Newton was a bit of both. But yeah, so what he had written in this paper in, I think, the 1930s was the idea that when you look at the formation of space-time, of our universe, it's something that happens within something else. So space-time is expanding within something else. And there is a place, I don't want to say place because place is the wrong word, but there is a something in which universes are created and expand. And it's kind of like the bubbles of sea foam at the beach, like a bunch of foam forms, and like some of the bubbles expand and then pop, and some of them are smaller and don't really expand so much or pop earlier. And so each of those bubbles is like a universe, right? And this is more or less our fundamental understanding of cosmology, of the formation of universes. And so that bubble expanding isn't just space physically, it's space time. So Have I gone too far? Are we deep
No,
in the
I'm
hole?
Just saying. No,
well,
yeah,
now it's going to get all kinds of
the thing
existential.
That,
now.
Like, just
existentially
me.
Distressing.
Just,
but
kills
there's
me.
It begs a question: what came before, and how long before that did that happen?
A chicken, sir.
Well,
see?
And
it,
I, it just
they didn't
it
have eagles
that,
for
like,
freedom then.
I can hardly. Ask me how to explain to someone how to tie a shoe, and I can kind of maybe give you some verbal walkthrough of that. But then these people, when like there's no electricity and like the wheel was just invented maybe a couple of millennia ago, are like, huh, let me think about our existence in the universe and the, did I yawn? I'm sorry if I yawned. I didn't mean to yawn. I also get up at 5 a.m. every day, you guys. No, I just can't believe that people came up with these concepts at those times. And I mean, like, Newton, right? He was avoiding a plague. He was probably bored out of his mind.
Oh, Isaac Newton, not my dog. Right, sorry.
No.
Right.
Your dog is probably avoiding a plague too, but yeah. There, I can see some of these people that you're like, yeah, he probably, you know, he was well-to-do and he was bored out of his mind and came up with these things. But like, seriously, if it was up to me, we would still be using horses. Like, it just blows my mind how much advancement we've had, especially during these times where it's like, wow, I don't know.
Pretty well.
Existential
it took us
crisis
20,000
mode
years.
Is. Yeah,
20,000 years to get from like, you know, discovery of fire to
fire.
A plane.
I was gonna say it's because our
and then
brain
from a plane to space is like 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm having problems right now. This was supposed to be the slow episode, and but you know what? I had an interesting conversation with someone today. We were talking about how now. We have all this modern technology, and how kind of in human history, we have these ebbs and these flows of like rapid development, and then it kind of stagnates out for a while, and then rapid development, you know, and you see it through different civilizations and societies, they rise, they fall. And he was saying, you know, think about right now how disconnected to the food chain humans are, how very, I mean, I
we no longer admit, a part of it.
Right. You, if I asked my children where their food came from, they know where plants and stuff come from. But if I was like, you know, how did this chicken on your plate get here? They would, there'd be a lot of explaining to do. But just a couple of generations ago, the kids would be like, yeah, grandpa went out there and chopped the head off, and then grandma plucked the feathers, you know, like it was totally different. And so, it's interesting that we have also this kind of natural regression that slows things down in our understanding, because we have these peak advancements and then it goes down. And so like space and space industry is a prime example of this, where people have no idea. Copy just sneezed so hard. He disappeared in this whole camera shook.
I fell off my chair.
You're saying we had planes and now we have space in a matter of 60 years, but now you have people that are going, well, why does space matter? Why should we be wasting our money on space? That's how common space is now. But like, think of that progression. It's a wild concept. Again, I think I'm really in an existential crisis mode now. And we're getting to our time here.
Existentially distressing.
Existentially distressing. Have we put you into a crisis? No? Well, go sit in a room with Kavi for a while. He'll get you there.
I'll sneeze you off the chair.
Gentlemen, do you have any final thoughts? Because we're going to wrap this up. Kavi has a firm 2-minute cutoff, so we got to wrap it up in 2 minutes. So, any final thoughts?
No. This is one of those episodes that makes me want to stop for a minute and just think about everything dying.
Why? Why are we here?
Why are we here for this little blip of nothing when everything's going to last forever and then die?
Whether we are created with design or randomly or as part of a simulation, we are a part of the universe that's trying to understand itself, and very that true. Is wild.
It is a cool, it is a very cool part of being alive. Agreed. Okay, we are the Space Case Air Show. We're going to wrap this up. Please make sure you go to irockspaceradio.com, listen to other shows, sign up for the Crew Club, follow us on social media. I'm Space Case Sarah. We have Fun Facts Science and Science Actually Science, depending on the platform you're on. And as always, we are so appreciative of you listening to this show. We'll be back next week. We got to think of some sort of fun end of the year thing. So we'll brainstorm that and, yeah, you join back in next week. And who knows what nonsense we're going to spew. This has been the Space Case Sarah Show with the space nerds, Kavi and Benjamin, here on iRock Space Radio.